Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. This time we're going way back to 1847 to unpack Frederick Douglass's speech, Abolition Fanaticism in New York.
Oh, this is a good one.
It really is. And, you know, we're always looking for insights that we can apply to making our corner of the world even better.
Right, like Deer Park LaPorte in Pasadena.
Exactly. So this speech, it's like a window into Douglass's brilliant mind and his unwavering commitment to justice.
Definitely.
And we'll be looking not just at what he said, but, you know, how he said it and why it still resonates with us today.
I think the delivery is really important for this one.
Definitely. And one of the things that really jumps out at you right from the start is that Douglass doesn't hold back.
Not at all.
Even though he's addressing the American Anti-Slavery Society.
Right.
Instead of just like praising the progress they've made.
He'd think that's what he'd do.
Right. He just dives right into this critique of America's core identity.
Like he's calling them out.
Yeah, and it's powerful stuff. Like, right from the start, he declares, I have no love for America as such. I have no patriotism. I have no country.
Whoa.
Right? That's a pretty provocative statement.
For sure. Especially for someone who's fighting for change within that very country.
I mean, can you imagine the reaction he must have gotten?
Oh, I'm sure it ruffled some feathers.
Definitely. So what do you think Douglass meant by that?
Well, I think Douglass was deeply disillusioned with the hypocrisy he saw in America.
Like saying one thing and doing another.
Exactly. The nation's all about freedom and equality, but at the same time, it's upholding the system that enslaves millions of people.
Like a complete contradiction.
Right. And so his rejection of patriotism, as it was understood then.
Like blind patriotism?
Yeah, it was a rejection of blind allegiance to a nation that wasn't living up to its ideals.
He was basically saying, you're not what you say you are.
Exactly. He was demanding more.
Holding America accountable.
And its own promises.
Yeah. And he wasn't content with just pointing out the problem either.
Oh, no. He wanted to shake people out of their complacency.
Make them uncomfortable.
Yeah. He even said, I am anxious to irritate the American people on this question.
Ooh, I like that.
Right? And then he goes on to say, I would blister it all over from center to circumference until it gives signs of a purer and a better life.
Wow. What do you make of that approach?
Well, I think Douglass understood that speaking truth to power often means making people uncomfortable.
You can't just sugarcoat things.
Right. He believed that complacency was the enemy of progress.
Like, if you're comfortable, you're not going to change anything.
Exactly. And that real change required disrupting the status quo.
Shaking things up.
Even if it meant upsetting those in power.
So he wasn't afraid to be that irritant.
Nope.
That voice that forces people to confront uncomfortable realities.
To see things as they really are.
And in a way, he was modeling a form of activism.
Like he was saying, don't just sit there, do something.
Right. Urging people to act rather than just offering thoughts and prayers.
Precisely. And Douglass took his activism beyond an America's borders, too.
Oh, yeah. Tell me more about that.
He actually sought support from England to pressure America into abolishing slavery.
Wow. That's interesting. Why would he look outside of America for help?
Well, you might seem counterintuitive.
Yeah, like why involve another country in what was essentially an internal American conflict?
Right. But Douglass believed in the power of international pressure.
Like putting America on the spot.
Exactly. He argued that America, despite its claims of exceptionalism, couldn't withstand the weight of global condemnation.
Like the whole world looking at them and saying this is wrong.
Exactly. By rallying support in England, he aimed to force America to confront its own hypocrisy on the world stage.
It's like shame them into doing the right thing.
In a way, he believed that shining a light on America's moral failings would compel them to act.
He wasn't just speaking truth to power. He was bringing a global spotlight onto that power.
Exposing its flaws for the world to see.
And it's a bold tactic.
Especially in a time when communication and travel were nowhere near as instantaneous as they are today.
Right. This wasn't just about giving speeches. It was about building international coalitions.
And leveraging global opinion.
It's pretty impressive when you think about it.
Absolutely. And that commitment to exposing hypocrisy extended to his critiques of American institutions, too.
Like what kind of institutions?
Particularly those that claimed moral authority.
Okay, I'm curious. Go on.
For instance, he was very vocal in his announcement of the Temperance Movement and the Evangelical Alliance.
The Temperance Movement and the Evangelical Alliance. Okay, for those of us who might not be familiar with these movements, can you give us a little background?
Sure. So the Temperance Movement was this social reform effort that advocated for moderation or complete abstinence from alcohol.
Like they were against drinking.
Basically, they believed that alcohol consumption was the root of many societal ills.
Interesting. And what about the Evangelical Alliance?
Well, they were focused on spreading Christian teachings and promoting religious unity.
Okay. So they were both pretty popular in America at the time.
Oh, yeah. They had a lot of influence.
So why would Douglass, a staunch advocate for the abolition of slavery, target these seemingly unrelated movements?
That's a great question. And it's one of the things that makes Douglass so fascinating.
So what's the answer?
Well, Douglass saw a deep hypocrisy in these movements.
Like they weren't practicing what they preached?
Exactly. He pointed out that while they claimed to uphold moral values, they often turned a blind eye to the plight of enslaved people.
Oh, wow.
They would preach about temperance and morality, but ignore the inherent immorality of a system that denied basic human rights to millions.
It's like they were picking and choosing which injustices to address.
Right. And Douglass saw their silence on the issue of slavery as a tacit endorsement of it.
Like saying, if you're not speaking out against it, you're complicit.
Exactly. He challenged them to live up to their own moral standards.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Exactly. He argued that true temperance and religious piety couldn't exist alongside the barbarity of slavery.
Wow. So he was basically saying you can't be truly good if you're ignoring this massive injustice.
Right. He saw their efforts as hollow and performative as long as they remained silent on the most pressing moral issue of the day.
And that brings us to a particularly dramatic incident.
Oh, yeah.
His confrontation at the World's Temperance Convention.
This is a good story.
Tell me everything.
So picture this. This convention is filled with American delegates praising the temperance movement.
Okay.
And Douglass is there.
He couldn't stay silent.
Not a chance. He saw the irony of Americans championing temperance while ignoring the millions of enslaved people who were denied basic human rights.
Including the right to attend such a gathering.
Exactly. So he speaks up.
He was being that irritant again.
He was forcing them to confront the limitations of their movement.
Making them uncomfortable.
And he saw it as his duty to speak for those who couldn't speak for themselves.
Powerful.
He reminded the attendees that true temperance, true morality, could not exist as long as slavery persisted.
It's like he was holding up a mirror to them.
Showing them the gap between their words and their actions.
Yeah. This speech is fascinating because it not only reveals the horrors of slavery, but also exposes the complicity of those who passively allowed it to continue.
Absolutely. He's not letting anyone off the hook.
And he didn't stop there. He also challenged the Evangelical Alliance.
Oh, yes.
Highlighting the fact that much of their funding came from individuals who directly benefited from the slave trade. So he was pointing out the hypocrisy of claiming to spread the gospel while being financially entangled with a system that perpetuated such immense suffering.
Precisely. He argued that their efforts to spread Christianity were inherently compromised by their ties to the very system they claimed to oppose.
That's a pretty bold accusation.
It was. But Douglass wasn't afraid to call out hypocrisy wherever he saw it.
And it's interesting to see how he was able to connect these seemingly separate issues.
Right.
Like the temperance movement, the Evangelical Alliance, and slavery.
He was showing how the fight against slavery was intertwined with broader critiques of American society.
It's all connected.
Exactly. He was a master at exposing those connections and forcing people to see the systemic nature of injustice.
And that's a key takeaway here. The fight for justice often requires us to see the interconnectedness of various issues.
It's not enough to address problems in isolation.
We need to understand the root causes and how they manifest in different areas of society.
Absolutely. And Douglass's speech is a powerful example of how to do that.
He didn't just point out the problem of slavery. He exposed how it was woven into the very fabric of American institutions and beliefs.
And he didn't just criticize either. He actively refuted pro-slavery arguments, dismantling the justifications used to maintain the status quo.
Like taking their arguments apart piece by piece.
Exactly. He engaged directly with those who attempted to downplay the horrors of slavery or excuse the inaction of slaveholders.
So he wasn't just speaking truth to power, he was actively dismantling the intellectual framework that supported that power.
Absolutely. And one example of this is his response to a Reverend Dr. Marsh. So this Dr. Marsh, he tried to argue that many slaveholders were basically like good Christians.
Good Christians?
Yeah. Trapped by circumstance.
Right.
You know? He claimed that they wanted to free their slaves.
They wanted to.
But they were prevented from doing so because of legal obstacles.
Ah, yes, the classic it's the law, not me argument.
Exactly. My hands are tied.
We still hear that today.
Oh, all the time.
When people try to deflect responsibility for systemic problems,
it's easier to blame the system than to acknowledge your own complicity.
Right. And Douglass wasn't having any of it.
He saw right through it.
He dismantled that argument by highlighting this $10,000 fund that was established by Jerick Smith and Arthur Tappan.
$10,000? Back then, that was a lot of money.
Huge. And this fund was specifically designed to help slaveholders navigate the legal complexities of emancipation.
So there was a way for them to free their slaves.
If they really wanted to.
These so-called good Christians.
Right. Douglass exposed the hollowness of their excuses.
Their hypocrisy.
Exactly. He revealed that for many of them, the real barrier wasn't legal.
It was moral. It was a deep unwillingness to give up their power.
And the economic benefits they got from slavery?
Exactly. It wasn't the law that tied their hands. It was their own greed.
and their attachment to a system that benefited them at the expense of others.
It's a powerful reminder that good intentions are meaningless without action.
You can't just talk the talk, you gotta walk the walk.
And in fact, unexamined good intentions can be used to mask inaction and complicity.
It's like saying, I care about this issue, but I'm not gonna do anything to change it.
And that's a trap we can easily fall into, even today.
Oh, for sure.
It's easy to express sympathy for people who are suffering,
but much harder to actually do something about it.
Especially when it requires us to confront uncomfortable truths about ourselves.
Or the systems we benefit from.
Exactly.
We have to be willing to move beyond performative allyship.
And engage in the messy, uncomfortable work of dismantling unjust systems.
It takes courage.
And Douglas had that in spades.
I mean, here he was a formerly enslaved man.
Speaking truth to power.
In a society that had dehumanized him.
And tried to silence him.
And it's important to remember the historical context here.
Oh, absolutely.
The Fugitive Slave Act had just been passed.
Which meant that even in free states, escaped slaves weren't safe.
Douglas was putting himself at great risk.
By speaking out so forcefully.
Makes you realize that even seemingly small acts of courage can have a ripple effect.
We might not all be Frederick Douglass.
But we can all find ways to speak up against injustice.
In our own small corners of the world.
Here in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena.
We might not be facing the same challenges as Douglass.
But there are always opportunities to advocate for those who are marginalized.
Or to challenge systems that perpetuate inequality.
It's about looking around and seeing where we can make a difference.
Exactly. Finding those pressure points in our own communities.
The places where we can apply leverage to create positive change.
And speaking of pressure points.
Douglass's speech highlights the importance of applying pressure from multiple angles.
He wasn't just focused on one thing.
He challenged institutions like the church.
Engaged with international allies.
And directly refuted pro-slavery arguments.
It was a multi-pronged approach.
To dismantling a deeply entrenched system.
He understood that systemic change requires a multifaceted strategy.
You can't just focus on one area and expect to see lasting results.
It's about working on multiple fronts simultaneously.
It's like gardening.
What do you mean?
You need to cultivate the soil, plant the seeds, water them regularly, and protect them from pests.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
It's an ongoing process.
That requires attention and effort on multiple levels.
And it requires patience.
Douglass understood that change doesn't happen overnight.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
He was committed to the long game.
Knowing that the fight for justice would take time.
And that's an important point, especially in today's fast-paced, instant gratification culture.
We want everything now.
It's easy to get discouraged when we don't see immediate results.
But Douglass reminds us that lasting change requires sustained effort.
And a willingness to stay engaged even when things get tough.
We have to be willing to play the long game.
Knowing that even small actions taken consistently can have a cumulative impact over time.
Little by little.
And it's important to celebrate those small victories along the way.
Those wins can fuel our motivation.
Remind us that our efforts are making a difference.
It's about finding that balance between urgency and patience.
Recognizing the need for immediate action.
But also understanding that true systemic change takes time.
It's a gradual process.
And it's a process that requires us to confront our own biases.
And assumptions.
Douglass's willingness to challenge even those who claim to be on his side.
Like the temperance movement.
And the Evangelical Alliance.
Reminds us that we have to hold everyone accountable.
Including ourselves.
It's easy to point fingers at the bad guys.
But real change requires us to look inward.
Ask ourselves, how am I contributing to this problem?
Even unintentionally.
It's about having those uncomfortable conversations.
Challenging those ingrained beliefs and behaviors that perpetuate injustice.
Even within our own circles.
This ties back to Douglass's idea of being an irritant.
Sometimes we need to be willing to disrupt the status quo.
In our own families.
Workplace.
And communities.
Can be difficult.
Yeah, it's much easier to stay silent.
Avoid conflict.
But as Douglass reminds us, silence is complicity.
When we see injustice and don't say anything.
We become part of the problem.
Our silence is a form of consent.
Speaking of speaking out.
There's another aspect of Douglass's speech that I find particularly interesting.
What's that?
His pacifism.
He was against violence.
Yes. He was a staunch advocate for peace.
Even though he had experienced the brutality of slavery firsthand.
It's a testament to his unwavering belief in the power of moral persuasion.
He saw violence as perpetuating the cycle of oppression.
The very thing he was fighting against.
It would have been understandable.
Even justifiable.
For him to advocate for a more aggressive approach.
Given what he had endured.
But he chose a different path.
He believed in the power of truth and love.
To overcome hatred and injustice.
He saw violence as a tactic that dehumanizes everyone involved,
both the victim and the perpetrator.
It's a challenging philosophy,
especially in the face of such immense suffering.
But it's also a powerful reminder
that even in the darkest of times,
we can choose to respond with love and compassion
rather than hatred and violence.
It's about breaking the cycle,
refusing to perpetuate the very behaviors we're trying to dismantle.
And it's about recognizing the humanity of those we disagree with,
even those who perpetuate injustice.
It's not about condoning their actions,
but understanding that everyone is capable of change,
and that change is more likely to happen through dialogue and understanding
than through force or coercion.
So Douglass wasn't just a powerful critic of Americans' failings.
He was also a visionary
who offered a path toward a more just and equitable future.
He saw the potential for America to live up to its ideals,
but he knew it would require a radical shift in thinking
and a willingness to confront uncomfortable truths. He challenged America to become a beacon of true freedom and equality, and that challenge is just as relevant today as it was back then.
Yeah, we may not be dealing with chattel slavery anymore,
but there are still so many injustices to confront.
Right here in our own communities.
And it's a process that requires us to be really honest with ourselves.
About our own complicity.
About the ways in which we might be contributing to those injustices, even unintentional.
We all have biases and blind spots.
Areas where we need to grow.
The key is to be willing to acknowledge those shortcomings and actively work towards becoming more just and equitable individuals.
It's about moving beyond performative allyship
and doing the real work.
The messy, uncomfortable work.
Of self-reflection and systemic change.
We can't just talk about justice.
We have to live it.
In our daily lives.
Making choices that align with our values.
And advocating for policies that promote equity for all.
And that starts right here at home.
In our own community.
Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena.
We might not be able to single-handedly abolish slavery
or dismantle global systems of oppression,
but we can make a difference in our own neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
We can support organizations that are working to address local issues.
Volunteer our time.
Have those difficult conversations with our friends and family.
It's about finding those pressure points in our own communities.
Identifying the areas where we can apply leverage to create positive change.
It could be advocating for better schools.
Supporting affordable housing initiatives.
Speaking out against discrimination.
And sometimes it's just about showing up.
Listening to those who are marginalized.
Amplifying their voices.
Creating spaces where everyone feels seen and heard.
Valued.
It's about building a community where everyone has the opportunity to thrive.
Regardless of their race, their religion, their socioeconomic status, their sexual orientation.
It's about building a community that reflects those values of justice and equality that Douglass so passionately championed.
And that work starts with each of us.
Making conscious choices.
In our daily lives.
And working together
to create a more just and equitable world.
His words are a call to action.
An invitation to examine our own beliefs and actions.
And to ask ourselves, what am I doing to create a more just and equitable society?
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Douglass's powerful speech.
A great speech.
I want to leave you with this question.
Okay.
How will you answer that call to action?
How will you be a force for positive change in your own community?
Remember, even small acts of courage and compassion can have a ripple effect,
creating a wave of change that transforms our world for the better.
And if you're looking for ways to get involved in making a difference right here in our community,
we encourage you to visit thinkandactlocally.com/donate.
Your support will help us continue empowering residents of Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena
to create a more just and equitable future for all.
Thanks for joining us for other deep dives.
See you next time.